Well, welcome to the TWID Show. I'm Chris Wink, your host and the CEO of Technically, a new site focused on local economies and change. Each week, the TWID Show dives into topics on building better companies with leaders who are doing just that. We're an extension of Technically's This Week in Jobs newsletter, which you can join at Technically Subscribe. Today, we're talking about something that's a bit too common at present, furloughing employees. But more importantly, we're going to be focusing also on how to bring them back. To discuss that, I am joined by two HR veterans who I'm going to refer to collectively as TNT. Talia Edmondson, HR nerd, scotch drinker, I've learned. She's a principal and founder of HR&B Consulting. Before that, she was the longtime director of human resources for RevZilla, a motorcycle culture online retailer. I also have Tamara Raspberry. She's a DC-based HR consultant with a focus on mental health, inclusion, diversity, and equity. She's the founder of Raspberry Consulting. You may know her better from her frequent conference speaking and talking about 90 Day Fiancé and serial killers on Twitter. Hey guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. So let's start with the absolute basics. We'll keep it snappy so we can move into the real meat. But furloughs, what does that word actually mean? Is it something specific? Who defines it? Is this can these be part of RIFs, reductions in force? Is this layoffs? Is this firing? Help me navigate those messy phrases and set me straight at the outset.
Tamara, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start and then you can pick up. Okay, so basically furloughs is when you keep people on your payroll. You keep them employed, but they're not working and they're not getting paid usually. So that's different from a layoff where you're actually taking them off of your payroll. They're no longer employed with your company, which is different from a reduction in force because not only are you taking them off your payroll and they're no longer employed with your company, you're getting rid of that job altogether. So there's no intention of bringing them back or even bringing anybody back into that same role.
Yep.
Bingo.
And like Tamara said, from a furlough perspective, the employee remains on your payroll for the purposes of benefits, which is really important when you are going to be taking an unpaid leave, essentially, for a period of time that is undetermined, truly, but you do get to maintain your health care so you don't have to worry about COBRA. If you are in a layoff or a reduction situation, you are no longer eligible to remain on your employer's healthcare plan, and you do have to find an alternate source of medical care, medical coverage. All of those scenarios, though, you are eligible for unemployment in all of those scenarios. So furlough is benefits. The other two are not. Everything is eligible for unemployment.
We're sitting here recording essentially in June 2020, the Federal CARES Act that came in the wake of the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has brought furloughs to the fore with a real sudden economic shock. But clarify for me, this is not, you know, furloughs, this may be something that may be part of people's strategies, has been for years, will be for years. Mm-hmm. This is a common part of small business folks, entrepreneurs should be aware of this generally, right? This is a fairly common, well, is it common? Is this a practice? Is this a tool that someone should be thinking about? Should they understand what the health furloughs mean?
I think it is fairly common. I mean, if you recall a few years ago, there was the federal government employees were furloughed for a good while Congress was figuring themselves out. So that type of thing does happen. I think that anyone who owns a business that has employees should always be mindful of changes that might require you to do a layoff or a furlough. You know, just optimally you won't have to, but it could be something that comes up. You should make sure that you know or can get in contact with someone who knows the difference and how you should handle it.
It's more of a, you know, how strategic can you be in the either financial situation that your company is in, the total economic environment. When you look at a furlough situation, like Tamara said, you're talking, like if you use the Congress example, there was somewhat of an end date to all of that madness, right? So they knew at some point they were going to get their shit together, and then they did, and then everyone came back to work. When you look at a layoff, it's relatively permanent in nature, in that the headcount is probably going to be on hold, but that particular exact job might not be refilled, right? So if you look at it from, I can afford X number of people at my company, but I just need this position moved over here, therefore this position is going to be in a layoff. Companies pivot very frequently. So In one instance, it might not be a financial hardship. It just might be a matter of, I need to take this headcount and shift it over here. And that's because right. I've made this organizational change, this job is no longer necessary to the organization, which sounds really terrible, but businesses change all the time, economics, financials or not. So it's really a shift in people and what you need at your business. Ideally, the person in the job can be retrained into the position that you need, so you're not eliminating them and having them be unemployed. You're hoping to shift that talent. That's the ideal scenario, but you're looking at one is more of like a temporary, even though short that term. Time frame can be exactly short term, or you know, a shift in headcount, moving that talent.
I want to come back to retraining, and I want us to spend most of our time in this conversation a bit wider and focused on furloughing as a practice more generally. But let's do a moment here specific to the pandemic we are in, the CARES Act that is rule of the law at the moment. Any specific differences to furloughing? Basically, any caveats to the furlough advice we would give normally that we're confronting right now due to the CARES Act? Furlough is somewhat different. There are somewhat different rules. Do I have that right? Or is this, you know, furlough?
Well, mainly the CARES Act kind of, in relation to employees that we're talking about right now, expanded the parameters for unemployment insurance. So it ties into furloughs because people who are being furloughed, like Talia said earlier, are eligible to apply for unemployment insurance, and the CARES Act has expanded the benefits that people are able to receive under unemployment insurance. Yeah. I don't think that the CARES Act should make a company be the determining factor of whether you're going to furlough your employees or not.
Exactly.
That's helpful. Okay, great. All right. So then let's dive a bit more into the strategy. This as a tactic, I suppose, you have as an overall strategy. So if you are sitting with a client of yours, or you're in house and you're giving advice to someone who's making decisions, and Dalia, you were touching on this a bit, but what are some of the earliest steps someone should take to determine, am I going down a furlough route? Am I doing layoffs? You know, how does furloughs sit in the toolbox, and when is it like the right scenario?
The guidance I've given is the permanency of the situation. Are you going to come back from whatever hardship you're in right now? And if the answer is yes, then a furlough could be the better option. I think in all economic environments, the idea that you are on unemployment is stigmatized in a way that you don't have value to a company. And in this COVID environment, I don't want to, you know, keep referring back to it, but it's a little bit hard not to.
Pretty big.
When you have 33 million people out of work, that's very different than thinking that you as an individual and your talent doesn't fit into an organization. So under normal circumstances, the guidance I would give is, you know, how permanent is this situation? If it's temporary, even though temporary can be, you know, 8 months, which doesn't sound temporary, but there's an end point. That's a furlough. With the guidance around, you know, a layoff or a position that's being eliminated, like I said, the conversation would largely happen around, can you redeploy this talent? This person has institutional capital that you do not want to lose, that you will lose if you hire someone from the outside to take on this new job. because your business had to pivot, because you've now gone from, brick and mortar to online. That person doesn't lose the knowledge that they have about your product, about how your business works, about how they're able to follow the money, about how they contribute to the organization from a cultural standpoint. You want to keep that. And if you're able to just reorganize where they are on the org chart, that is much more to your benefit than it is to just let them go and hire fresh. So my guidance there is arm them with the resources that they need to be as valuable in a new job as they were in the job that is no longer considered, you know, part of your business moving forward.
Mm-hmm. I would like to add to that, though, that that example really speaks to if you're laying off one person or a few people.
Yeah.
But if you're doing a mass layoff, then it's unlikely that you're going to be able to make those shifts for each individual person to put them into a different part in the organization. A lot of times mass layoffs are based on financial decisions. So it's like, we need to cut costs really quickly. How are we going to do that? We're going to lay off 100 people. So it's unlikely that most employers are going to try to take into account, okay, is there a way we can move these 100 people into other positions and retrain them? Like, that's just not, it would be great, but I don't see a lot of employers doing that for mass layoffs.
Right. And in that scenario, I do want to say it's extremely important to engage counsel. If you do not have in-house counsel, there are a great number of employment lawyers that can help you through this. Tamara and I both know several who come at this with the element of humanity that you need if you are in a mass layoff situation. There are a myriad of laws that need to be considered, and not to just like keep harping on the legal aspect, like don't do this without a lawyer, you're going to get sued. I mean, you might get sued. So, you know, do yourself a favor ahead of time and engage the right resources. But in a mass layoff situation, there are a lot of things that need to be considered. And even if you love and trust your in-house people operations, HR practitioners, you still need a lawyer. HR people make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. We're all human. And I think the better you insulate yourself with the right resources, if you are in a mass layoff situation, the better situated you'll be.
Mm-hmm. Worthwhile note here to say, we'll certainly underline that point. Depending on your company size and place and stature, both employment law, but also HR consultants, as you, Dahlia, noted, like certainly use in-house resources when you have them, but look at supplementing that. This is not meant to be, this is meant to point you in the direction of things to learn more about, not to replace that advice, right. Indeed. Tamara, I'm thinking about the wellness side of this, both on the individuals who are obviously most immediately and dramatically infected, the organization mm-hmm. whole, the people who are still there after the fact. At the beginning of this process, hey, we are just now doing the furloughing. We're going to come to bringing people back. Are there elements of mental health that you think folks don't think about or easily overlook or any kind of words of caution you would want to give people at the beginning of this process of deciding if we're furloughing and we're going to do the furloughing and we're going to announce the furloughing to other staff? Stuff that you would want mm-hmm. to be thinking about?
I would say, coming from the employee standpoint, it's going to be very important how you communicate the furloughing to them, especially the necessity for it, why you're needing to do it. If you know what the end date is going to be, communicate that. Like, communicate as much information as possible. Because I actually read a study from Qualtrics that said that employees who are furloughed have more of a decline in their mental health than employees who are laid off because the uncertainty of it.
Oh, interesting.
So the more information that you can provide them, the better. But I would also say, from the HR representative standpoint, because I have a lot of peers who have had to do mass layoffs and mass furloughs, and it impacts them mentally because they're still working, but they just had to lay off 100 people or 500 people. And that has an impact on you as well. So I think throughout the organization, think of how, whatever the role that you play in this, how that's going to impact the mental health. So if you're the person that's being furloughed, if you're the person that's giving the information about the furloughs, if you're the person who's saying, sorry, I have to let you go, like all of these things are going to impact people. So the more resources that you provide people, whether it's your EAP, whether it's outsourced counselors, whatever, just to make sure that people have those resources and you aren't just like letting them go and drop the ball.
I suppose some of that would run both for those who are being furloughed, but also those who aren't perhaps being furloughed, but sit alongside those who are being furloughed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of times they have a form of survivor's guilt where like, oh my goodness, my best friend at work had to get laid off or furloughed and I'm still here. And they, you know, you're happy that you still have your job, of course, but then you feel sad that your neighbor or your friend doesn't. So same thing, have conversations with them. Don't just expect them to be happy they're still there. Like, have those conversations. How are you feeling? Do you need support? Things of that nature.
Yeah, I'm sure it's quite overwhelming given the nature probably of any number, you know, one or two furloughs or dozens. I wonder if maybe we could walk through a pretty specific example, maybe, like just getting to some details, obviously keeping things entirely vague, but maybe either of you, if we could talk through from, hey, I decided I am furloughing, to like the real mechanics of how it was done or messaged, just anything that we think folks could get some advice from. And then I'd love to return to or move on to the process of keeping communication and reboarding. But can we do a moment here? I'm not sure if Tamara or Ty, have you guys seen any specific examples from afar or close up that you can walk us through?
I will let Ty start this and I will pitch in.
So let's talk about an example where you have a business that maybe is, well, first of all, I want to just go back to what Tamara was saying in a furloughed message, because I think that also ties into this kind of like workshop-y type thing we're going to get into here and the language around being an essential employee and a non-essential employee. And the psychological component that goes along with you as the person who's getting furloughed and hearing that you're non-essential. Because 3 weeks ago, you were crushing it. And now all of a sudden, you're non-essential.
You don't need me anymore.
Right.
Right. And what kind of mind F, I know we're supposed to be keeping this informal, but I'm not going to do that. And that has a lot to do with, you know, that the psychological component of someone telling you that you're not needed anymore, but your friends who's now dealing with their survivor guilt because somehow your coworker was not essential, but you are. So why? What exactly does that mean? Right. So in an environment where, you know, your business has to pivot. So I'll use the brick and mortar retail with a fulfillment component to it. So a B2B as well as a B2C. When you are in a situation where you have to close stores because the brick and mortar shopping is not safe or the CDC guidelines prevent, you know, foot traffic from being in a store, that also hits the fulfillment center folks who were responsible for the B2C, but the B2B is still going, right? So you have people who are working side by side, where half of the population is now going to be furloughed because that aspect of the business is not doing any customer traffic. And then the other half of the business does have to pay. So in those conversations, you're trying to explain to an employee why they are not needed for an extended period of time. It's tough when the employees will, you know, without fail, and quite frankly, if this happened to me, I would do the same thing. You start keeping score. Why them? Why not me? You know, right. Or why not them? Why me?
Right.
You start keeping score. And even the most diplomatic, human-focused explanation is still the business explanation. And it's not going to sit well. And I think the problem with that discussion and making that decision is the people delivering that message often fail to go in eyes wide open. And you can be as apologetic and as sympathetic and as empathetic and all of the aesthetics that you can be when you deliver that message. But ultimately, you're telling someone that for an extended period of time, they're not going to have a job, or permanently, they're not going to have a job with you. And I think the eyes wide open aspect of that conversation is often missed. And the person delivering that message is not equipped to deal with the pushback, to deal with the questions, to deal with the emotional response. So I think in that kind of, you know, half of the business is operating and the other half of the business is not, and that kind of separation and division of employees and putting them into buckets is the first part of the challenge. Mm.
Can I tag on to that really quickly? You made some excellent points, Talia, of course, as you always do. I would say that part of the person giving the message not being equipped to do so is why we see this rash of furloughs by email and layoffs by, you know, automated phone call and all this type of garbage, which is totally unacceptable. But I think it's because people don't want the human response from it. They just want the person to know, you're not coming back tomorrow. That's all I want you to know. But I would also say that there's something I wanted to say about something else that you said. Can't remember what it is now. So we'll move on.
Content out there, you know, it's tough. But so we can certainly reference back to that. But let's move into the phase here of folks are on furlough.
Oh, I know what it was.
Yeah.
It was that if you already have built a culture of communication, then when you have to communicate things like this, employees are more understanding. They're more willing to understand. I know that this employer isn't just out to get me, isn't just picking on me. I understand, you know, they're explaining things to us well. It's a lot of times when you have that culture where they don't tell you anything, they're not transparent about anything, and then it's like all of a sudden, we have to lay off or furlough these people and not these, you're definitely going to think, well, why? Why is this department not needed? And this department is needed. You're also going to want to make sure that there's no perception of discrimination or inequality when you're doing it. Say, for example, you're furloughing a department that happens to be all women or happens to be all Black people. You might need to legitimately furlough that department, but it's going to look real funny if you don't furlough another department that's all white men. So, like, those are the types of things you have to take into account as well.
Yeah, that's crucial to point out. The theme that you're hitting on is there are parallel tracks of both the by-the-book tactics and the emotional element, and you're foolhardy to think you can just, like, I checked all the boxes, I did all of the official, you know, HR standard practices, but a lot of the emotional that is just, it's just so much harder to track, but so crucial, that seems important. On that theme of communication, I want to push into someone is on furlough. What's an appropriate level of communication? What's an appropriate level of communication?
As much as possible.
Yeah.
Consistent. And I would say it kind of depends on how long you expect the furlough to be. So if you said 3 months, then, you know, once or twice a month might be sufficient. If you said 8 months, I think the longer the furlough is expected to be, the more you need to communicate, because the more time that goes by, people are going to be more worried that they might not get their job back, even if you said initially that they will.
Are these phone calls, emails, letters, video comp, like what would you say is the tactics of doing this? If I have someone on furlough.
Mm-hmm. This is the note of caution before I answer this, I think is important from the DOL standpoint, is if you have a lot of the folks that were furloughed are going to be hourly non-exempt employees. So if you're communicating them, if you're trying to communicate with them in a way, so work email, your work email is likely to have been suspended.
Exactly.
You can't receive that. And if you think you're going to communicate with people in a way that they will understand it as work, you need to be extremely respectful of how much time you're asking them to put into the communication that you are trying to make to them, because it is work. And you can't just take advantage of this kind of like situation that they're in where they're like technically on your payroll, and having someone on payroll for the purposes of benefits is not an exchange for work.
Free work.
In that communication. Sure. Now is also not the time to do anything new and cute. If you were not a company that did not survey before this, do not start randomly doing pulse surveys like, how are you?
Yeah. While I'm not getting paid. How am I unpaid?
Now is not the time. So to your question, Chris, of is it letters, is it emails, is it phone calls, focus on the specific way that person individually, and this is where it's a lot of work. Focus on how that person was individually communicated with before. If they were very close with their manager and the manager is capable of reaching out and saying, I want to check on you, is it okay if I call you? Or I want to give you an update. You can't rely on a work email, because like I said, their work email was likely suspended, terminated their account, whatever. Figure out the best way that that person was communicated with before this. Do the work. Don't be lazy. You're working. You're getting paid. They're not. So do the work. Figure out how they were communicated with prior, and then try to stick as close to that as possible.
And absolutely.
To do that parallel check of like the by the book and the like, hey, depending on the organization type, there's emotions tied too. Let's just assume you do have there's a manager who had a good relationship. Let's presume some of the benefit out. There was a good, you know, dynamic there. By the book might just be, hey, I'm letting you know that our plan as stated is still right now true. You know, 3 months furlough, we are still on track for that plan. Mm-hmm. But the emotional might just be, hey, also, I was a manager, we were pretty close. How are you doing as a person? That might be a conversation if that is appropriate, or what might be some of your guidance there in terms of the communication type? Let's say you left a voicemail and said, hey, is it appropriate to have a conversation? Whatever we think the non-work email mechanism would be to get someone on the call. And let's assume that employee said, yes, I would be okay with that call. They've opted into that conversation. If they've opted into that conversation, that might be your advice, phone call, like check in also them as a person in addition to the by the book information.
I wouldn't do a temperature check by voicemail.
Okay.
By voicemail, I might just say, I'm calling to let you know we're still on track for furlough ending in a month. You know, if you have any questions, feel free to call me. If I actually get them on the phone, then I would say, you know, oh, and how you doing? I know this is a tough situation. I don't want you to think we value your job any less, you know, that type of thing. But again, as Talia said, if you don't have that kind of relationship, don't pretend you care about me now. If you didn't pretend you cared about me in the office, just let me know when the furlough is going to be over and we'll keep it moving.
Matter of fact, can sound cold as Tamara and I are describing it. But the point here is, if that's what your folks are used to, stay consistent. Mm-hmm. You can't have been matter of fact and very, you know, non-relational, and then suddenly it's like, how are you?
Exactly. You know? No, how are you really?
Yeah. I'm just fine. Oh, you're just fine? Yeah, I'm fine.
Literally.
I'm fantastic. I'm stuck in my house. I got more people living here than I ever did before, and I have to lice all my groceries. How do you think I am? Like, this is not...
Right, exactly.
So, the point is, just be consistent. Now is not the time to introduce something new. Just, when you're reaching out to people, be consistent. And I think that, more than anything, as cold or as personal as it might be, is comforting, because it's consistent. Mm-hmm. You can find comfort in consistency.
It alleviates a lot of the uncertainty, which is what a lot of people are challenged with in these type of situations.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay, so we're coming up on time, so I want to turn to, let's say that the furlough did its job. We are going to bring these folks back. There's a mental health component, there's a logistical component, you know, retraining, reboarding. Tamara, isn't this just the same as leave of absence? Can I just do like, I had someone that went on sabbatical. Can I just like play that same playbook? Why is this any different?
No, for a furlough, it's very different because for one thing, going on a personal leave of absence or a personal sabbatical just impacts you. You didn't lose your job. You chose to take time off, or your job offers sabbaticals, which are still paid. Usually sabbaticals are still paid. The furlough is not. And a furlough is an official move from your organization. So we're officially, the same way they gave you an official notice that you're going to be furloughed, they should give you an official notice that they're bringing you back from furlough. It should include all the same information about what your role is going to be, the date you're expected to return, all of that type of stuff as if you were re-offering the position. Like, it shouldn't just be, hey, James, come in Monday. Like, it should be a formal bringing you back from furlough.
Like an offer letter, almost, yeah. As if. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just clarifying.
No, yeah. That's what you should do.
So we've considered that it's going to be like an offer letter. What do we think? What is reboarding? Talia, you've written a great, you know, guest post actually on Technically, and you've used that phrase before too. I found it really helpful. What does reboarding mean? And what are some of the steps that we should be thinking about as we build a plan to do so?
If you were a company that had a well-thought-out onboarding plan to begin with, you can start from there and add a few things. Like, the, you know, Tamara was talking about, you know, the kind of like mental health and the psychological components that come along with being furloughed. But when you're being reboarded, that's also a consideration, because we were talking about the difference between essential, non-essential. Suddenly you were not essential. If there's going to be a psychological component with someone, it's almost like you got labeled, like you weren't necessary, and now you are necessary again, which is great, but maybe it was a headcount trim for a period of time, but the work itself still needed to be done. So that got shifted to a coworker. Now you're getting it back. Mm-hmm. Imagine someone's doing your job for, let's just call it 6 months until you get called back from your furlough. It's a new set of eyes, could be a new process. Someone got your work and now they're doing it differently than you are, and the company has decided that it's a better way. So if they're going to stick with a new efficiency or a new process, you are now getting retrained on a job that you have been doing for the better part of who knows how long before you were deemed not necessary anymore. People need to be prepared for what that person is going to feel like when you are taking them through these paces. And the concept of reboarding is, you know, does include the recognition of that psychological component, because on the other side of this situation that we're in now, and in general, employees always take notes about how you treat them. Mm-hmm. And the job market, though it, you know, has taken a slight hit now, I don't think it's going to be as down for as long as it was in 2008, 2009. I mean, I genuinely hope that it's not. But what that means is the market is going to be there for the people who are highly employable, very talented people. And if someone feels like they weren't treated well, they're going to leave and they're going to be able to find another job. In addition to the retraining kind of psychological recognition component, you know, what as a company are you in need of changing to make sure that your employees in general, furloughed or not furloughed, do need to keep kind of, you know, what do you need to readjust? So be honest with yourself as a company. What were you not good at? How did you screw this all up? Like Tamara was talking about before, people getting laid off and text messages and emails and voicemails and all this other kind of, like, that was ridiculous. Hopefully we're never in it, you know, the companies are not in a situation where they're doing that in mass again. But if you take a step back, where did we screw up? Where was our communication poor? What policies, HR people love policies. What policies do we have that didn't stack up? Tamara and I talk to people all the time about bereavement and how much of a draconian, awful policy that is that exists. in this situation, people have lost loved ones and have been stripped of the opportunity to appropriately grieve. And just because everyone's physically going back to work, don't think for a second that they have finished with the grief process of someone that they lost. So going forward, in a situation where it's COVID related, you know, when you're looking at bereavement as an example, grief now is not going to be any different than grief 3 years from now. So how are you treating people from a policy standpoint and looking at those things now? We're coming up on, you know, we're in summertime. People would usually take paid time off. How does your paid time off policy or your paid leave policy get extended into next year because people aren't taking time off? Was your EAP up to what it needed to be to meet your employees that were in crisis? Mm-hmm. People are using telemed. They're seeing their psychiatrist online as they should be. What was the copay from being seen in person versus teledoc? Was it still unaffordable? Was it different? Are people getting hit with out-of-pocket expenses in a time when, if they're furloughed, they can still use their benefits, but they're not getting paid. Exactly. So there are a lot of things as a company internally that's part of reboarding where people need to be really honest with themselves. Companies need to take a hard look at the inside and say, where did all of this fall down for our people? Because they take notes and they're going to leave. And it's foolish for companies to think that there is no job market that's out there right now, because there really is. You plug that hashtag hiring now into LinkedIn, there are a lot of opportunities available, all kinds of opportunities. And it's not, I think, the entry level, you know, kind of what executives would think are, you know, gig jobs or grunt work or trench work or whatever awful label they have. Tamara and I have had this conversation before, and she said to me, the people that are in jobs that they don't like will go get a job that they do like, regardless of what you think that job is or how you perceive that job. If somebody's in a job that they don't like, they're going to go get a job that they do like. That's just it.
I would say also, as we previously mentioned about the employees who are left in the office while other employees are furloughed, there's the reboarding or the retraining for the furloughed employees should include those employees as well. Because like you said, if I've been taking on this other person's work for 6 months, now they're back, they're doing the work again, but you know, what do I get? Like, was that person recognized for doing that additional work? Do they get any kind of a bonus? Do they get any kind of a, it's like, yeah, you might have been in a bad situation, but that person still did above and beyond. That person still did two jobs for the price of one. Mm-hmm. And when you bring the other person back, if you just go back to, okay, business as usual, thanks for that, they're still going to feel like you treated them as bad as you treated the other people. You know, it's like, there's always something that you have to be mindful of, whether the person was able to stay in office or whether they were furloughed.
Mm. We're at time, so this has been great. We'll be sure to recap a lot of these points and give lots more to people to dive into. I'm wondering if you could send us off with any, maybe like foundational philosophy you would most want folks to walk out with, or even just like small tactic, like, this little thing you could do would make this process of going to furlough folks, communicating with furlough folks, bringing furlough folks back, anything you'd want to arm us with that's most digestible?
I would say always come from a point of humanity and empathy. You know, how would you want to be treated? How would you want your mom to be treated? Mm. How would you want your child to be treated if they were going through this situation? No, yes, it's a business decision, but it's a business decision that impacts people. It impacts their families if they're the breadwinner for their family. It impacts a lot of things. So do it in the most humane and empathetic way that you can.
Talia.
100% agree with the humanity element. And I think, you know, from where Tamara and I sit and all the things that we read and hear, that's the one piece that's missing. And I think it's oftentimes due to people not knowing what to do. So my advice would be stay humble, but be nimble. So pivot when you have to, but also raise your hand if you have no idea what the hell to do. Don't fake it. These are, you know, these are people's lives that you're dealing with, and there's no shame in saying, I'm not really sure how to do this. I'm going to go get help to make sure that I do this the right way.
Yes.
That's perfect. Okay, guys, we got to go. That's this episode of The Twid Show, an interview series about building better companies. Thanks again to my guests, Talia Edmondson and Tamara Raspberry. If you found this valuable, please like and subscribe. As each week, we will bring you new episodes of The Twid Show. You can click for additional episodes. I am Chris Wink. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.